Welcome to Chai with Sam Dosa. My podcast has been going on since June 2020, and I've been blessed with so many amazing speakers, guests came onto my podcast. I have completed my half century, so I'm going towards my century now. And it's an exceptional that so many people wanted to be on my podcast, and I'm very blessed with that. Today is another great speaker, another coach, another a great person. The title is The Soul Nutritionist, a great title of her position she's holding at the moment. She's a bestseller, as well as she is being on Roku TV and Amazon Fire Stick with a hosting two programs at the moment. So without further wait, I would like to say welcome to Raina Rose from Los Angeles, California. Welcome, Raina.
Well, thank you so much, Sam. You're joining me from my hallway. We have work going on in the pool outside. So we're trying to get the quietest room in the house.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. So would you be able to tell my audience who Raina is and what's her sole purpose in this world?
Sure. So I'm known as the soul nutritionist, and sometimes that gets confused with a regular nutritionist that prescribes food, but I'm really focused on the soul. And, you know, one thing I say is that if we sat around eating pizza and ice cream every night on the sofa, we wouldn't be very surprised if we felt lethargic and heavy and couldn't do the things we wanted to do. But with our souls, we often, you know, treat our souls with the equivalent of pizza and ice cream and do things that make us feel empty and awful afterward. But then we wonder long-term, why do I feel apathetic? Why do I feel anxious all the time or a little bit depressed? And so I deal with the soul and how to really connect with creator, connect with self, and connect with other people.
Wow, that's beautiful. So tell us about more about, because this understanding about the soul is quite a inner job, because when people talk about souls, when people talk about different level of understanding of soul, is not everybody's I would say cup of tea, because people will say, oh, I'm not I don't want to listen to this, you know, this mumbo jumbo. I'm not talking about angels, I'm not talking about this, I'm not talking about that. To give us a very simplistic definition, why one has to work on their soul?
Well, there's things, let's say, so my book is called Sin Tastes Good, right? And the subtitle is Nourishing Your Soul in an Empty Calorie World. And so there's so many things in this world that are empty calories, whether that's gossip, or jealousy, or all these things that actually harm you. They may feel kind of good in the moment to gossip about someone or think, oh, it must be nice to have that. But you know, after it's over, after the gossip is finished, or after, it, you know, you feel kind of, you know, I hope they don't find out what I said about them, or I really shouldn't have been just sitting around saying, you know, awful things about these people. And so that's like just some basic ones. There's also, you know, more individual things that harm us. You know, I give some examples of sin simply means to miss the mark, but it was kind of a salacious title where you go, whoa, what's that book about, right? And, but for some people, you know, I give the example, if you deal with alcoholism, walking into a bar is missing the mark for you. It's not going to be a good idea. But if you don't struggle with that, it's probably fine. You go meet a friend, have a drink, have a good time. If you're a person who drinks alcohol, if you know, you have a problem with debt and shopping is a snatch for you, you know, it's like something that is missing the mark. You may not want to go window shopping, you know, or go buy the sales. You might want to drive around it. And so a lot of what I talk about is identify what you want for your life and then see if you're on the path to going there. And if not, make some changes.
True. Very true. So, you know, when you talk about everybody's journey is a way of life, they become a way of life if you decide to make it a way of life. And everybody has this inner joy, inner gift. So I just wanted to share a Sufi lore over here, because Sufism is one of those areas where we talk about a lot of love. It's not about the physical love, it's about the love for your soul, about the journey of your soul and how you're going to go forward within yourself. I mean, within intertwining within your soul, you have that spark, which is lightened. You need to enlighten it again, because we are mesmerized with so many things outside. And we are just, oh my God, I want to do this, I want to do that. This is all worldly thing. We are just being shackled down because we think this is what it is. We have been prison of our own prison. So with this lore, with this Sufi tale, what the Sufi master said to the disciple, you know, go in the world and bring me something delicious, sweet, so sweet that when I put it in my mouth, I will feel, wow, I will feel so embrace it. So everybody goes there. Some bring a baklava, some bring sugar, some bring honey, bring all sorts of different sweet, which they think is going to be best for the master. Everybody came in, everybody started giving the offering to the master, and one disciple did not bring anything. And the master said, why didn't you bring anything for me? So he put his tongue out from his mouth. All other disciples started laughing. But master says, no, he's right. Your tongue is the most sweetest thing in the world, because the way you say or way you articulate words to others, they listen to you and they will feel so good about themselves. So next morning happens, and then again the master called upon all the disciples and says, go now out and bring me the most sour thing, which I can put in my mouth and I feel, I don't want to eat it. So everybody went out and then started getting some citrus fruit, and they were buying some gherkins, and then sort of all of the things which you don't want to put in your mouth. So everybody came back and everybody offered, and master says to that disciple again, so what did you bring? And he put his tongue out again. And everybody started laughing. And I said, no, he's right. Again, because your tongue is the most vicious thing, can say something and does not have a bone in it, which gets penetrated to your soul, not only your heart, to your soul. So be careful how do you say things. Be careful how you articulate things, because you never know who you're going to hurt with those things. And when you talk about those gossips and everything, and when people started to gossip about it and then feel embarrassed about it afterwards, and they feel it that they're done wrong. So you can imagine that once it goes from your mouth, you're never going to bring it back to you. So the Sufi master says, you know what? He is going to be your leader when I will die, because he knows the knowledge of this understanding of what is needed to be presented to the world. So I thought I better share this with you and see what's your thought on that.
Well, I love that, because, you know, you and I discussed a Christian perspective and a Muslim perspective and a Hindu perspective, and having different perspectives, but a lot on the same things. And of course, in the Christian tradition, there's a Bible verse that says, the power of life and death is in the tongue, so speak life. And that's what, you know, when we speak life over ourselves, we speak life over other people, we become kinder, not just to ourselves, but also to others. It's kind of this infinity, you know, and if we're, you know, uptight and really hard on ourselves, we don't notice it, but we're usually pretty hard on other people too. And so I think it's really important, like you said, to have that sweetness on the tongue, to speak sweet things to you, speak sweet things to others, speak sweet things to Creator and receive sweet things. And I think it's hard when, you know, sometimes we get this vision of Creator, whatever we call God, that is, you know, some people say Father God, especially in the Christian tradition, or Abba, you know, and but people who maybe had a dad who was fierce when he came home from work and a little tired and not very friendly, they begin to think of this very taskmaster God, right? And one that's not very kind and not very graceful. And then we feel unworthy. And then we're not very kind and very graceful with ourselves. And then that transfers to the person that we are around, that we're not very kind or graceful with them. So why didn't you do that? You know, you should have tried harder, rather than really looking for the sweetness, the beauty in life and in people and in creation and creator. And then we live a much more peaceful, graceful life, because it is that infinity. What goes in comes out and back and forth.
It's true, very true. It's all about understanding, you know. Sometimes, you know, universe or law of attraction, a lot of people call it, and any religion, we call it a universal religion, the religion we follow, whether it's a Christianity, whether Abrahamic religion or monotheist or polytheist, but the source of the light is one. Everybody follows the one light, but it's been put into. So my partner is a Hindu. She follows her religion, and she does not believe in the rituals. So she believes I'm a universal soul. I need to follow one thing and one thing, which is just one light, and that's it. And we were having a discussion about that. And then this is, you know, we are putting that pure light into those things and putting them into that and locking it. So people will just putting their faith on an idol. It's the idol you are looking at, not the pure light within that, because you just say, no, the idol will do the things for us. And as in the Bible, in the Quran, in the Judaism, in the Torah, everything is all concept together. Is this one God, follow that one light. And that's the universal truth about it. That is one light, you follow one light. It's been given different names. Whether you call it a Krishna, whether you call it Ganpati, whether you call it Kali Mata, but light is the one light, which we all got it. But the only way to source it going in is to start looking within yourself. If you are not looking within yourself, means you are just outside bling, and that's what you're looking, because that's not the contentment. That is where you are creating more resistance. You says, you know, whenever I ask the God, whenever I ask the universe to give me something, I never receive. Well, are you humble about it? Are you conversing correctly? Are you present in the moment? Or you're just going on the go and saying, well, if the God is so merciful, and if the God is so humble and so this, he should give us everything. Yeah, he will give you, but you need to surrender yourself to him. Without it, it's not going to be possible. There is a submission. You need to submit. Without it, you're just going to be thinking of that. If I'm not submit, I'm not going to receive. That's the understanding of each person.
And it's the opposite of that, isn't it? It's when we finally go into allowance that we often receive. And I want to touch, you were talking about, you know, that light within ourselves, and it's said in different ways in different traditions, but in the Christian and Jewish tradition, in the Torah and Old Testament, you know, it talks about God taking this clay figure he's made, and tell me, I'm not sure if it's the same or a little different in the Muslim tradition, but, you know, he takes this clay figure and breathes his own life into the figure.
Yeah.
And it becomes this mysterious human divine creation. And so, you know, when in yoga we say the divinity in me honors the divinity in you, that's very accurate from what a lot of these other traditions would say, because we have been breathed in by divinity. We are being breathed by divinity. And if the one who created all has breathed his very breath in or her, and it, even in Christian and Hebrew scriptures, it's back and forth between the him and the her. So, you know, later on it just all became him, but, you know, it's both language in the original Hebrew. And, you know, so if we are all breathed in by this creation breath, I think we're doing a disservice to our creator if we are not therefore going out and creating. And with the book, I'm constantly comparing nourishment of the soul and exercise of the soul to nourishment of the body and exercise of the body. And I truly believe that when we're going out and we're using our talents, when we are going out and creating, this is exercise of the soul. And this is why I believe so many of us, you know, we drive in our box back to our box garage, eat our box dinner and put it inside the box, you know, and then we watch the box, you know, at night or the, and so, and we don't create anything. And so our souls are just, you know, imagine just sitting on the sofa for so long, letting all your muscles atrophy, eating just the worst foods that aren't even really food. And how would your body feel? Well, this is how our souls feel. And that's why a lot of us walk around, and I've had it before as well. I mean, that's the only reason I can write about these things is because I've experienced them when we're feeling like, what's life even about? What am I doing here? And it's when we're not exercising the soul and being creators created by a creator and being in his image, her image, and going forth and creating. And I think that's why so many of us feel very spiritually out of shape.
True. I think it requires your surrounding as well, who you sit, who you interact, what your beliefs are, whether wherever, whatever your religion you are from, you have to start open up. You can't just say, I want to be in a closed box. You know, there is a lot of things to be learned, because when the universe of the light of that precious light, which has been spirit has been put into you for a reason, because you have a destiny to, or you have a things to do in this world. That's why you've been given that particular thing in you, which is his soul. And that light has to be enlightened, because otherwise, how are you going to be intertwined? We have this Sufi saying that when they were sitting in the heavens, God says, there were about so many Sufis sitting there in the heavens, and the God says, okay, ask me whatever you are, because now you have reached to this place. Ask me what you want now. So certain Sufi says, we want the wealth of the world, or we want to be immortal. And so they say, okay, given. Some other Sufi came and then asked for this and that. The God had given. There are a bunch of Sufis just left. They were not going anywhere. So the God became very angry. What do you want? I've given everything to everybody. Why you are not going and asking me what you want? So if we wanted the heaven, we would have taken a long time ago. But we don't want heaven. We wanted to intertwine into you, because that's what our journey is all about. We don't want to be here. We want to be with you, because we want to be the elixir of that thing, to be part of you. And that's the growth. God said to them, grant you. You were patient. You were thirsty. You were looking for that elixir. So I'll give it to you. Come, join me. And that's where a lot of people, a lot of things have been diversified with people, the translation, interpretation, and how you interpret things. And people listen, and then they do not understand the context. They do not understand, and they jump on the conclusion of things. And you have to go on your own journey as well. You can't just say, okay, yeah, I have read so many books. I'm wealth of knowledge now. I know everything. That's what Rumi was. Rumi was a scholar. Rumi was a well-to-do man. But when he met his companion, Shams Tabrizi, who made him Rumi, Rumi says, I don't know. Teach me. And they started the 40 days together in one library for 40 days. And there is a book called 40 Rules of Love. And that's where everything started. And Sufi, he became a Sufi. And then he started talking about the love of the infinity, the love of God, the love of, there is no physical love. There was no sort of a sexual love we are talking about. We are talking about the love for your soul, the love for the infinite, and how you're going to connect with that thing, which will enhance your ability to be present or intertwined while living in this world to the creator who has created them.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. And, you know, we talk so much about, like you were saying in the beginning, to be with all kinds of people, right? And to love all kinds of people. And that we don't need to just stay in our tiny groups and our tiny boxes of people who all believe the exact same thing we do, because that higher love loves all, which means we can love all. We don't need to hate one another. And you and I talked on our last conversation that even the three, you know, monotheistic Abrahamic religions, like we can all at least agree in Muslim, Judaism, and Christianity that we are talking about the same God, the God of Abraham. Yeah. But even if not, you know, and I discussed with you, I grew up in this wonderful international school in Brunei growing up. And, you know, everyone was from a different culture, a different religion, a different, you know, they'd listen to different music and wear different clothes. And this was very celebrated, right? It was always about celebrating the way that we're different. And then I moved to America, and I feel like this has really permeated a lot of culture these days, is we all want to be the same. We all want to look the same. We all want to believe the same. And we there's no room to celebrate differences.
Very true. Very true. And that's where the hierarchy comes in, where we started to distinguish between people and then started to thinking about that there is a hierarchy of people. If you are not a Muslim, if you are not a Jew, if you are not a Christian, if you are not a Hindu, if you are not this, if you are not that, then you started creating a level of non-understanding of each other. And you say there is a hierarchy, you know, I'm bigger than you because I follow this. And that's where the conflict started to happen. And we are trying to say, no, I'm right, you are wrong. But not understanding that we are all right, there is no such thing as wrong, because we are not understanding the interpretation correctly. There's only, and that the connection between a lot of people happens because we just have to look into the soul. It's not about that I'm brought up with a very, not strict, because I follow the Islam as a submission to the Lord who has created us, the submission. And then I start talking to my friends who are Christians, who are Jews, who are Hindus, who are, and we talk about things, and they talk about this thing and say, okay, that relates somewhere. You can see there is a relation here. You know, we are all intertwined into one, because if God wanted, he would have created all of us the same. But there will be nothing to talk about. We will be the same.
It would be so boring. And you know, something I always say is the trees never want to be the same. You don't see a pine tree saying, I'm better than a maple tree, and an aspen tree saying, I'm more beautiful than the pine. It all of variety is what makes life beautiful in humans too.
Yes, absolutely. Without it, you seems like in the same container doing the same thing. You wake up in the morning, you go to work, you come back to work, and then you eat your dinner, you go to sleep. You are in the same cycle. Weekend comes, you do the same sort of chores in terms of going to show grocery store, getting a grocery, come home, put the fridge up, get everything in the fridge, talk to your partner or your children, or spend time with them. And then again, you are back into the sort of a roller coaster on Monday morning. The life is full of joy. You know, every moment has to be enjoyed. Every second needs to be enjoyed. And remembrance of this, your Lord, is not about going to that specific time, whether it is, let's say, oh, well, the mass is at 6 o'clock in only on Sundays. And then I'm going to go to the church, or we go to the church, or we go to our mosque every, nowadays it's quarantine because we can't, but prayers is not about that specific time. Prayers is about every second, every breath you take should be given to that thing as well, because that multiplies. That multiplies in thousands and in millions, because the prayers, the word you say it, it goes to the universal light and says, oh, somebody's remembering, because I remember them all the time. Somebody's remembering me. So more blessings to them.
Absolutely. And you spoke earlier about, you know, the creator, just wanting people to pursue the creator, right? And that's one thing, you know, and I'm sure the Muslim tradition has something similar, but Jesus says, those who seek will find. Those who knock, the door will be answered. And many in the Christian faith believe that hell is not necessarily burning and gnashing of teeth, but the absence of God completely. And that would be absolute hell. Whether you're in this life or beyond it, if you are completely distanced and away from the creator of all the beauty and all this diversity, that's what is hell. That's complete absence of this bliss and enlightenment and joy that we're seeking when we seek truth. And I truly believe, you know, those who seek will find. And if we seek creator, we seek truth, we will find that. And if we seek to affirm our own beliefs, well, we'll find that too, right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So it's one of those things, you know, one has to start. There's another story which I would like to share with you, because I think that might be very interconnected. So Gautam Buddha, the Buddha who has been the focus of everybody's, how he lived his life to help billions and billions of people to understand the elixir is present within you. So he said to his disciple, go find me the place in the world where I can hide this elixir so nobody can find it. So the disciple went, came back. One says, why don't we die? Why don't we just put it into the sea? The deeper in the sea, nobody can go and get it. World is so powerful. The man is so powerful that this is, well, I can dive. I can dive and I will get the oil out and I will go further down to see what is there. And that's what said, no, I can't die. I can't put it in the sea. Man will find it. And man has found a lot of things in the sea. And then another person says, why don't we put it in the universe, in the space? We see everything in the space now. We are looking for another habitant where we'll find another people like us. We will be going to their city or their space station or their planet, I would say. He says, no, I can't do that. Then a couple of other disciples suggested a lot of other things. Then he says, you know what? I know the better place. I'll put that in their heart. That's the place. We will look the bling. That's the deepest place. We will look the bling outside. We won't be looking inside ourselves, because that's the place where the pure light is present. When you reach to that place, then you intertwine and you feel like, oh, everything looks so beautiful. Every space looks so beautiful. And you realize that this is where I want to be. I just want to stay in this moment. I don't want to disturb. I don't want to be going anywhere. The other things around me is transient. Let's begin to have a journey which is completely a solace and contentment to me. And the life is full of joy and everything.
You know, and that's actually a lot of what I teach in my books and what I do, is to get in silence and to allow the things in your mind to begin to clear, all the protective barriers we put around our heart to begin to break away. And I encourage people to, especially at first, bring a journal, because so much will come up first, get it all out. And then that inspiration, that elixir, that divine intelligence begins to come out with, you know, a great idea for that family problem that you just haven't been able to solve, or a business idea that you have been kind of thinking about but couldn't get your finger on. All these things, when we really get in silence and we allow that divine intelligence that's within us to come up, it comes out, but it's that still quiet voice, as you know, in the Bible, it says God speaks not in the thunder and not, you know, he's not going to yell at us to get our attention. It's that still quiet voice that we must get in the stillness to then, it's always there. It's always ready to speak to us, but we are out, like you said, chasing the glittery, chasing the glamorous, you know, getting in the noise, and we don't hear the still and quiet. But when we can still and quiet ourselves, and especially when we can make that a practice that we do daily, well, then that divine inspiration comes up more and more and more.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So tell us about your journey and where are you right now? Because there are a lot of things. You must have experienced some amazing things on your journey. And as you are now teaching a lot of people to how to enlighten yourself, or how to take a enlightened bath of your soul, how you clear those things and how you go forward. Please share with my audience.
Right. So we talked a little bit about, you know, experiencing that bliss, that light, right? And so when I kind of coin it as living heaven on earth. And so I grew up, like I said, in an international school in Borneo, moved back to the United States. But when I was in Borneo, it was just my brother and I. We were the best of friends. I joke sometimes because we were each other's only friends on the neighborhood. And we came back to America. We stayed the best of friends. I tried to fit into all these tiny boxes that America says we must look like this, we must think like that. And it didn't work very well because they had been exposed to so much more. And in my opinion, so much better, so much more inclusion, so much more celebration of the differences that God created us in. And so then when I was 27 years old, he was 24, my brother and I, we were having brunch with our family. And 4 hours later, he was in a motorcycle accident. He died instantly.
Oh my God. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. My best friend in the whole world. And I had been studying contemplative prayer and meditative prayer for maybe 6 or 9 months before this happened. And I had some mystical experiences, right? Where I'm in heavenly places with Jesus, spending time. And I remember telling my spiritual teacher, I said, is this normal? This is what's happening. He said, well, you know, as long as you're pursuing the one the experience is with, and not pursuing only the experience for the sake of, you know, the glittery, shiny thing. So I continued to have this. And when my brother died, I just grabbed the ground screaming, and I wanted to just melt into the earth and die too. And it was like a piece of me died. But because I had been in that contemplative practice for a little while, I remember after I finished, like had no more screams, I thanked God for the time he didn't die when he was a little baby. And then the time that he was attacked by dogs and didn't die when he was 5. And when he just 1 year prior, he was riding his motorcycle and a deer came out of the woods, hit him in the leg and rolled over, and he kept riding and he didn't get killed by the deer. And I just thanked him for, thank you for more time and more time, all this time we had together that could have been cut short. And so in the midst of my grief, I could be thankful. Thank you for the wonderful 24 years I spent with my brother, who was my best friend. Not everyone gets to say that about their siblings, that they were best friends who did things together almost every day. And so before my brother died, though, I led this positivity group with women, and I was always positive and being a leader, but I didn't have a lot of empathy. You know, if someone was having a bad day, I had a positive mantra to, you know, give them so they could stop having a rainy cloud over their head. But when my brother died, that whole surface level positivity broke, right? And one friend told me, because I'm usually like very put together, very happy, you know, a joyful person in general. But this was the first time she had seen me completely vulnerable, completely broken. And she said, it was the first time I ever saw you as human and not bulletproof. And I felt comfortable to tell you my problems and the things that were going on in my life. And it was at that moment that I realized, wow, I didn't have it all together. I was just saying happy, positive things. I mean, I was being grateful, of course, but to the extent that was a little bit phony. And so from that point, I started being a lot more open about not complaining about my problems, because I still don't believe we should complain and get all stay in them for longer than necessary, but being real that, yeah, you know, I have this doubt too, and I have this hurt also, and this is the parts of my life that aren't as pretty as the happy ones that I'm very grateful for. And so this journey to develop empathy, you know, for me required my very best friend dying. But in the book I teach, we don't have to have a tragedy to develop empathy. You know, we can learn from others and begin this journey. And so I've been really grateful because I've had great spiritual teachers. I go to monasteries and spend time with the monks and just spend days in silence, you know, 6-7 days in silence. And by the time I say about the second or third day I've been in silence, I can hear the blades of grass around me like a symphony of violins, and all of nature suddenly becomes this orchestra that was there all along. But again, until I got centered and quiet enough to hear it, it's as if it wasn't there.
Yeah, true, very true. It's called sitting into this mindfulness every day for 5 minutes to 10 minutes and just sit there. You don't have to do anything. You just sit and breathe. That's it. And just think about your five senses. And those five senses started to enhancing itself every day. You know, we said, oh, I don't have time to sit in mindfulness. I says, you have 824,000 seconds a day. And you don't have 10 minutes. That's quite shameful. Or I was reading about this. There was somebody, the person who thinks that he is the billionaire, and if he do not have 10 minutes to sit in mindfulness, he is the most empty, or the most person who does not have anything in his world, in his life. He says it all.
Absolutely. Time is the only thing you can't buy more of, right? And for me, you know, you can waste my money, you can waste, but if you waste my time, to me, that's the biggest insult. And I try not to do that to others either, because if I feel that your time is invaluable and I show up late, or, you know, yes, we can spend time in meditation, but to me, your time is the most precious thing you have. Right now, you're spending this hour with me, and it's a precious that we give each other this gift.
Absolutely.
And I think, we, like you said, we have to look at it as a gift and remember that we can make all the money in the world, but if you don't have time to sit and enjoy that beautiful mansion you've bought, if you don't have time to sit and really enjoy the family around you, well, then you're completely impoverished. And that's, again, that poverty or wealth of the soul. Because who cares if you have all these things if you are always in the office and never have time to enjoy them?
Yeah, very true. Because that's what a lot of couples, a lot of relationship breaks down because of, I said, I've been working so hard to earn money so I can give you the best things. But you didn't ask me. You didn't ask me that I want those sort of things. I just want your time. There was a story about this boy. Ask his dad, Dad, tell me how much do you make for an hour? Why did you ask me that question? He was so angry with Dad, and he says, go to your room. I don't want to talk to you about this. When the father calms down, he went to his son and says, I'm sorry, I yelled at you. But why did you ask me? I just want to ask you, how much do you earn for an hour? So the father says, I earn this much an hour. So he broke his money pot to get that $50 out and says, Dad, here, can you spend an hour with me? Can you spend an hour with me?
Right. Yeah.
Your entire life has just gone into a sort of a dip.
I've had this discussion with my boyfriend before, you know, and I'd say, I want your time more than anything. And he says, well, you know, I need to make money for our future family. And well, if you don't spend time with me, you'll never have a future family together. And so, you know, if you want that family, you have to invest the time now. And I'm like, if you're not going to invest the time now with me, what about our children? Will you be spending time with them? If you don't make the habit, and that's one thing, we really become the sum total of our habits. If we get in the habit of, you know, busying ourselves, and sometimes if you really look at a lot of those things that you're busy, it's not productive busy. And I love Tim Ferriss has a lot of material on busy. In his mind is a new word for lazy, because it means you don't manage your time well, you don't prioritize well, and you're too lazy to get that all together so that you're no longer busy. Mm-hmm. And so busy is, and it's often also an excuse to not do the things that matter. Right? I'm too busy.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that's where people create this vacuum of being telling everybody, I'm busy, I'm busy, I'm busy, I'm busy. I don't have time, I don't have time, I don't have time. They have ample time, but because they are so confused in their own world, they don't realize that what they are doing is they are self-harming themselves, continuously self-harming themselves, not realizing that there is one day will come that he will be or she will be lonely for the rest of their life, because somebody calls you and says, oh, well, I don't have time to talk to you right now. Oh, I don't have time to speak to you, or I don't have time to go out for a quick coffee or something like that. And people will always assume that if I'm going to call this person, he's going to say, don't have a time. Why I bother about it? So he has cut off himself or herself from the world, and then going into that deep of depression or unrealistic life he has designed himself, because he has been telling himself, I don't have time. I don't have time. I don't have time for myself as well. So he's not putting time for himself. How is he going to give time to others?
You know, and I think what you bring up is such a product of a society that praises busy to mean important. Workaholic means that you must be doing great things. And, you know, this hustle culture that we live in these days, and it's unfortunately permeated most of the world, that we praise busyness for the sake of busyness. You know, even people who want to look important in the office, hold some papers and walk fast, make it look like you're busy, right? Is the you've heard this said before. Because we praise this busyness, what if we praise the person who got a lot done but stops and talks to the person along the way and has so much, because they were so focused, they were centered when they got to their work, that it took them half the time. And now they actually have time to stop, to engage relationships with coworkers, with their family, with all the things that actually matter. In the Bible, they talk about store up your treasure in heaven where moth and rust can't get to it. And I truly believe our treasure in heaven, among other things, are the relationships we form on this earth. Our souls, you know, we're not going to bring our cars and we're not going to bring our houses into eternity, but we bring our souls and the souls of those who we connected with on this planet. And the ones that go before us are the treasures already stored for us in heaven. And the ones that come after us will come later. But these are the things that, like you said, truly make you wealthy. It makes you a billionaire of the soul.
It's one thing which I would like to share with you is, you know, what I had vision is that when we die, our soul does not directly go into the divine. It has stages. So in certain books, it says you go into the smoky cloud. Within the Quran, it says you will see the smoke around you until you are ready to uplift your soul to that divine light. Because what happened is, as we said, as you said, that gifts of the soul, we have to two sets of bank balance we have is a worldly balance and there's a spiritual balance. Which balance is higher? If your worldly balance is so high and the spiritual balance is so low, then your family has to pray for your soul to be uplifted to that next level, because you will not be able to say, okay, everybody says, I want to be in heaven. I want to be in heaven. That's fine. You can be in heaven. No worries. But there are seven stages of heaven. You are on the first stage and you say, I'm in heaven. I'm having so much fun here. And the creator is sitting and watching you and say, oh yeah, he's happy. Let him be in on the first level. He's not interested to come to the second level to get the better place, to the third place, to the fourth place, and then intertwining in his soul. And that's what the conception of a lot of people. And it came to me. And then I started thinking about it. And says, you know what? Somebody says to me, oh, you are so blessed. You're going to go in heaven. I say, I don't want heaven. Thank you very much. I don't want heaven. I want to be intertwined to the creator. And that's the bliss. You know, I'm talking to you. Mm-hmm. You understand that. If I want to talk to somebody else who won't be able to understand, he'll say what he's talking. He must have been mental. Mm-hmm. Or he must be on a weed or something, or what I was talking about. So our journey in this world is transient. Once we started to think about that we have to die one day, we started to start living our life, because we think that we are mortal. We are going to live here for the rest of our journey. But no, you lost your precious brother. You lost something from yourself. And when you become vulnerable, people started to interact with you. That's the authenticity. That's the vulnerability of people will start to open up. If I'm going to show a demeanor that I'm always going to be positive, I'm going to be very strong-headed, I'm going to be this, is everybody. Look, this guy has a very different demeanor to other people. You look at Tony Robbins, you look at other people who are in this industry of professional personal development. They show this demeanor to people. There is no authenticity over there. Because they want to show people that I can do it, you can do it as well. But not everybody is in the same vibration or same journey as you and me.
Mm-hmm. And if you're only in that, I'm positive all the time, well, you can't meet someone in their stage of the journey. If you can't, you know, go down a different path or come to a different level of joy or, you know, I'm so positive. And if you can come down to, you know, we talk in the Bible as well, mourn with those who mourn, right? And if I can't mourn with those who mourn, I can't truly touch them where they are. I can't truly connect.
Yeah. Very true. Very true. So tell us about your book and tell us about how people can connect with you.
Sure. So my book will be on Amazon. As of Thanksgiving 2020, which I think is 26 November. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually, if you follow my Instagram, which is the soul nutritionist with the little underscores under the words, I will have it pop up for free, I think the day prior. So keep a lookout for that. If you're listening, you can get it for free. And you can also visit me on my website, which is www.reina-rose.com. That's R-E-I-N-A-R-O-S-E.com. And the book, it really talks about everything we've been talking about right now, really connecting in your relationships and seeking deeper connection with God, with yourself, with others. And it really, it doesn't answer any questions. So if you like to have all your questions wrapped up and put in a box, this is not the book for you. But if you like something that's going to take you on a journey to your own soul's path, this will really help you ask the questions and come up with your own answers as you seek them inside with that light in your heart and find truth. And so again, that Sin Tastes Good. It'll be available on Amazon and Amazon Kindle and all kinds of, I think it's going to go to several other bookstores after Amazon gets its hands on it.
So what I will do is once the podcast is ready to be released, I will really appreciate if you send me all the links.
Perfect.
So it will be embedded on this podcast. So people will be love to get your books, love to hear from you more, love to know more what Rana is doing right now and how she can be approached and achieve and get in touch. So now this site which we are going to be talking about now is more about people knowing what Rana likes, whether she is indulging, is she a foodie, is she into movies, is she into very health conscious in all cases, soul health conscious is one thing, but body health, physical health conscious. So tell us about your hobbies, please.
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny. One of the things I have in the book as far as being health conscious is I said my favorite movie growing up was Buns of Steel. And they say, not a movie, you say? You know, but I would take my mom's Jane Fonda videos and I would be dancing in the living room thinking, this is fun. And, you know, in Borneo, we didn't have a whole lot to do. And to me, I got to dance with Denise Austin and Jane Fonda. And so I've always loved fitness. And I especially love fitness in nature. I love to go kayaking or walking or hiking or biking. Yeah, and I love just a good book and a bath, a lot of things. You know, the things that, of course, we all have are, I love what I do for work. So that's great too. But there has to be a separation, right? When as much as I love what I do and I enjoy connecting and doing all the things, there needs to be a time when it's just, okay, it's time for a bath and a piece of chocolate and a good book. And I'm going to just have some time to meet, or, you know, spending time. I live in the mountains half the time and I'll go sit on a rock with the pine trees all surrounding me and just enjoy nature and soak it up. And again, that's when some of those inspired ideas come. And so I have a journal with me just in case. And if not, I still get to enjoy nature and sit and soak up the goodness that all this created earth has to give us. And, you know, it doesn't require any money to sit out in nature, right? And this is the richness for our soul.
Tell us a little bit about your TV shows. What sort of TV shows you're doing?
Sure. So I have two TV shows on CTM News Network. One of them is called Soul Nutrition, and we discuss the various ways of nourishing our souls. And I've had guests on there from Anglican monks to people bringing clean water all over the world. The second show is just a small segment. I'm only hosting it for a couple of months, and it's on sustainability. And so I've interviewed people from sustainable fuels and sustainable building. And it's a very conservative network that the conservatives don't tend to get on board with sustainability. So I've kind of shown how sustainability is not just good for the environment, because sometimes that demographic doesn't care, unfortunately, but how it's actually a great investment and very profitable for the future, because that's what that audience cares for. So we've really honed in on how profitable sustainable, and if you don't start with sustainable building and sustainable fuels, you'll be left behind in your investments. And so, you know, bring people onto the sustainability train one way or another.
Absolutely beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you, Rana, for being my guest today at Chai with Sam Dosa. It was a privilege talking to you on different area of soul, of the journey, and great conversation with you. So, guys, you have a great listening to this podcast, because she has shared some great wisdom with her. And we had a very good connection in terms of the upliftment of your soul. And that is what is all about. It's not about your transient presence. Your soul is the the key to where you will be intertwined to the universal light. So thank you very much once again, and I wish you all the best on your journey.
You as well.
Thank you.